Are the rules of the energy transition fit for purpose, or do we need to rewrite the rule book to ensure we meet our urgent decarbonization goals? Lucy O'Connor, founder and director of Trifecta Energy and daughter of Eddie O'Connor, author of Supergrid, Super Solution, thinks it's time for an energy revolution, a total rethink of the systems originally designed for the fossil fuel era. But how do we do this in a sector known for regulatory red tape and operational silos? Lucy highlights the three critical pillars of initiating systemic change, namely grids, innovation, and investment. She also explains how systems thinking, aligning stakeholders, and applying systems change can yield the speed and scale of change needed to really transform our energy system. You can meet Leslie at Enlit Europe in Bilbao, where she will be sharing more on these perspectives. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Leslie, thank you so much for joining me today. We're talking about systemic energy transformation. It's quite a big, chunky topic. But before we even get into the nitty-gritties of what that means and potentially how we need to rewrite the rule book of decarbonization, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to be working in this space.
Pamela, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor. I'm a great fan. Yeah, look, I come to working in this systemic change for the energy transformation space, if that's a new space, through wearing different hats, I suppose. I suppose I've had about 14 years as a renewable energy utility scale global renewable energy practitioner and board member and an investor more recently, working operationally with the renewable pure play company Mainstream Renewable Power, and now Aker Mainstream Renewables, and on their board, and more recently as an investor through our family office, which was I suppose originated through value creation activities in the renewable energy space primarily. And I suppose our investment thesis and mandate primarily is around decarbonization of not just the energy system, but wider, to get those Paris aligned goals in a climate science aligned timeframe. So yeah, I suppose I'm less operational now when it comes to the renewable energy space, but more focused as an investor, but taking a lot of experiences and observations with those other hats, and challenges, and seeing in recent years huge amounts of value creation, but also increasingly, quite significant value destruction and a huge amount of volatility in the space. I suppose really questioning and wondering, what are the things that are blocking us from deploying the levels of capital? By us, I mean the globe, deploying the levels of capital and deploying the existing commercially available technologies at the speed and the scale that the climate science demands of us, to be true to what should be demanded of us by our children within our own lifetimes. I really think that we could and we need to be doing so much more. So taking the perspectives I've had, and they're possibly fairly unique perspectives, but like anybody's perspectives, they're a perspective, and trying to understand others' perspectives in this as well. Trying to think about how we can do more and what that means in terms of the policies that need to be changed. What is it in this system that is not fit for the purpose of complete decarbonization of the energy system? How do we get over silos and all of that? So yeah, 14 plus years across wearing different hats and realizing there's an awful lot more that can be done, and we're not going to get there by doing what we've been doing to date. So some serious changes are needed.
Leslie, when we were preparing for this podcast, something that was so evident to me was how a lot of what you're busy with, it's born from a place of great frustration. And you know, I get that with some of the conversations I have with people within the sector, that there's so much drive and so much passion and desire. And like you say, the capital is there and the technology is there, but we're not quite moving at the speed and scale required. Tell me a little bit about that sense of frustration and how it's really been a driving force for you personally, and how you want to actually harness that to affect change.
Well, yeah, look, I think for a number of years, even as a practitioner across, again, different roles, different disciplines in the operating space, I find myself thinking, gosh, how are we going to trip this tripling of the investment that's required? How are we going to scale this? What are the human capital resources that we need, the people, all of these barriers that we see, the huge overheads when it comes to, you know, individual investments? How can we standardize things more to scale and remove a lot of the complexity, and also bring people on board, bring the public on board, remove some silos almost of how we operate as an industry? So there were clear questions in my mind for a number of years. And when I left my operational role, I suppose I've been talking to lots of different people across the sector in a particular geographic space, and recognized a similar level of frustration with people in the industry, recognizing, you know, the huge potential that there is, the huge potential in terms of natural resources. I come from Ireland, so a country like Ireland has absolutely enormous offshore wind resources, for example, and yet we have one single very small offshore wind farm that was built about 25 years ago. So a country like Ireland just hasn't reached its potential in any shape or form in that respect, which obviously is a huge source of frustration for my colleagues in this country. And then we see things like, you know, the emergence of the potential of digital intelligence, this idea of electrotech, you know, coming to the fore. And again, so much potential there for those who embrace it and the nations that embrace it. And it just doesn't quite, there needs to be an unlocking somewhere. But that frustration is there. And it's shared, I think, is the thing. And the more I talk to people, the more I recognize that I'm not alone, and there are others that have this.
Leslie, you know, as you've been touching on various things and really explaining the frustrations that the sector is experiencing, this is not a new thing. This has been coming for decades. And I know that even within your family, you have this legacy of trying to initiate change and really combat these frustrations with practical solutions. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, certainly. So as some of many of your listeners will probably appreciate, I'm lucky to say that my father was an Eddie O'Connor, the quite well-renowned renewable energy entrepreneur, who many would count, I think, as a visionary in the space. At least that's how he's described back to me quite frequently when I meet people. And he certainly had a knack of identifying challenges, issues, opportunities that were coming down the tracks that others at the time didn't also envision or fully appreciate until, I suppose, he helped to open their eyes. So yeah, a lot of the frustrations that we feel now, a lot of the challenges that we're seeing now in terms of the lack of capacity in our grid infrastructure globally, are things that he certainly would have highlighted quite early on. In fact, it was in the early 2000s when he first came up with the concept of a super grid for Europe, recognizing the intermittency of wind. Solar at that time was still extremely expensive. Anyone who can cast their minds back to the early 2000s, it's certainly not what it is today. So the focus at that time was on the intermittency of wind, but I think the same can apply to solar, at least in terms of seasonality in outside of the solar belt of the world. And he was thinking, how do we get over this obvious major challenge if we're really going to increase the penetration of this incredible natural resource and clean up our energy supply? So what he came up with was this idea that the recognition that the wind is always blowing somewhere. And in Northern Europe, we have storms that pass, you know, from typically from west to east. And if you were to cast, if you like, a net, a large enough net over the continent, you would capture the power that's generated by that storm or that resource in a time and place, and you could redistribute it to where it's needed at any one point in time. So similarly, you with the advent of solar, you can capture extremely complementary solar resources running from the south, very complementary with wind from the north in terms of seasons as well as intraday, and have a very complementary, you know, near baseload, if not baseload system, if it's interconnected enough. And this concept of a meshed interconnection grid is what he called the super grid. It would be overlaid on top of existing more regional and transmission and distribution infrastructure. A lot of it would be offshore. Some of it would be interconnecting, you know, major parts of regions, essentially like an electricity highway. I like to think of it as the internet for electrons, you know, essentially taking the generation where it is being generated in a space and time and transmitting it to where it's needed instantaneously, just like the internet. Would also have a lot of, in terms of energy security, because it's meshed, wouldn't be just point to point, which is how we do things now, but would have, you know, built-in redundancy to improve bad actor attacks and all of the rest of those things that, you know, we can imagine now, which were not to the forefront of any of our minds back in the early 2000s.
When we talk about systemic change, tell us and explain to us what you mean by that kind of change and the various elements that need to be addressed so that we can achieve this kind of visionary transformation that, you know, obviously it's not just about the grid, but the grid does form a really large part of it.
Absolutely it does, but you're absolutely right, it's not everything. if we were to boil it down to kind of three key things, and again, taking the heritage that I'm fortunate to have grown up with and the school of thought that has inspired my thinking, and hopefully I can help bring it forward, adding to my own practical experiences. You know, if Eddie was to talk about three themes for the last 5-10 years of his life, they would have been grid, it would have been innovation, and it would have been price. Price are essentially markets and financing that enables the requisite investment at the speed and the scale that we need. So the other thing, I suppose, in terms of system, essentially, when we look at any part of the wider energy system, we have to take stock in effect of the fact that we are trying to transition or transform. I like to use the term energy transformation rather than energy transition, because essentially this is the industrial revolution of our time. So incrementalism is not going to get us where we need to get to. And that's kind of one point we have to acknowledge, firstly. But we also have to acknowledge where it is that we're coming from and where it is that we need to go to. So we're coming from entire systems, financial systems, market systems, grid systems, incentive systems, organizational systems that were built around the fossil fuel era. They are fit for the fossil fuel era still. And we are trying to increment the changes from those to get to something that is fossil fuel free. And any system change theorist would probably tell you that to radically change something, it's much harder to increment, and you really have to try to reimagine. So again, kind of going back to what I learned from a lifetime of living with, working alongside and having the benefit of the wisdom of Eddie O'Connor, is, you know, one guiding idea that if rules don't fit the purpose, you can change them. You can seek to change them. And if it's important enough, you will do everything in your power to try to change them. If you can't change them, maybe it's time to find a different game, get off the pitch. But real change happens when enough people and want it. I suppose, yeah, really, we need to kind of zoom out and redesign our systems in intentionally. Again, that's looking at the infrastructure, like grid. If we, it's looking at the financing piece, and what incentivizes the right investments in the right things. It's about innovation. You know, having the right, we're in the middle of a digital age as well. So how do we apply and you know, the enormous explosion in AI in the last 18 months. So how do we marry those two things together? And how do we create an environment in which we're applying the smarts, the digital intelligence to this challenge of the energy transformation, to leapfrog these incremental changes, this period of incremental change that we have? You know, I firmly believe that the intelligent application of intelligence and digital it is the way that it's a superpower that we have now, which we didn't have a number of years ago. And so the whole landscape has changed. So fundamentally, it's about reimagining systems that are fit for the purpose of the desired end state, the fully decarbonized economy of the future that provides clean, secure and affordable energy for all of us. And then to understand where we are and map backwards, right to left thinking, rather than trying to slowly increment and get bogged down in the incumbency that we have today.
You know, you mentioned specifically the fact that Eddie suggested that if the rules are not fit for purpose, we need to change them. So let's not beat around the bush and be polite. Clearly, the rules are not fit for purpose. Change is needed, and we need to address the specific barriers that are hindering our progress and our fast-moving progress, you know, because obviously incremental change just simply isn't enough. So my question to you is, what are some of these barriers? How do we address them? How do we actually attack this thing with more gusto rather than these kind of polite incremental changes that you so rightly say just it's insufficient?
So if we take those three headlines I mentioned earlier about innovation, grid and financing as being the three areas that we really need to tackle and that the opportunities that we have, if we take those three as the kind of three headlines, there was a fantastic report by Ember out just 3 weeks ago on the electrotech revolution. And this is really all about the marriage of clean electricity and digitalization. So I think one of the barriers, maybe it's a lot of it is almost like a mindset shift in my mind anyway, noting this is a revolution, not an evolution, or needs to be. And through digitization and innovation, we have the tools to, you know, accelerate change in the way that we need. So we need to embrace that. We need to embrace all digital innovation and the application of smarts, intelligence, AI to help us solve the problems and the challenges that we have in delivering a transformation, delivering transformative change. We need to recognize that there are digital solutions that are readily available, that are deployed in pockets that are commercially proven, the likes of certain innovative grid technologies, as an example. I mean, I really like that phrase, and I think some of your previous guests have quoted it, that the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. And this is the point. We need to understand where solutions already exist and bring them together. So innovation is a huge thing, and I think countries that really embrace that will be in a position to leapfrog others. So where they enable sandboxing, where they enable, you know, digital twins and digital simulations of systems and can deploy and test solutions, hardware in the loop testing, things like that. You know, that's really, those are the enabling steps that can be taken. But firstly, the barrier is probably recognizing that these things can be innovated and these solutions, the hooks for these solutions exist. And, you know, we need to have the ambition and the vision to apply them to our current system and our current challenges. We've spoken already, I suppose, about grid. I think it's widely accepted at this point that grid needs enormous expansion and enhancement, but we also need to optimize the grid that we already have. The technologies that we use in our grid today are quite old, to put it bluntly. There, again, are existing grid technologies, grid enhancing technologies, or innovative grid technologies, if you're feeling a little braver, depending on how conservative you are in your mindset, that again are out there, are proven commercially, they're proven in certain systems and certain regions, but they're not broadly adopted. So there is a certain resistance to changes, but again, we can use innovation to help us leapfrog the kind of your typical 3-year pilot phases and this whole idea of death by pilot. There are things that we can do to accelerate that kind of testing and deployment cycle with technologies that we have today and the technologies that we can apply to the problems. But these innovative grid technologies, they can improve existing grid capacity. They can reduce the lead times for deployment of new infrastructure, the cost of deployment of new infrastructure, and the capacity of new infrastructure as well. So they really need to be considered when we're investing in our grid expansion, but also looking at what we have today and seeing how we can optimize these systems. We've spoken already, I suppose, about the need to unlock capital, knowing that we need to triple the investment in renewable energy in a very, very short space of time. Why isn't capital flowing? This is a question I sit with often as a renewable energy practitioner, board member. We've obviously sat on lots of different investment committees, so really understand why projects do and don't get financed at that level. But then you look and you consider, well, what is the nature of the finance that's required and the nature of project finance, the certainty that's required, the risk premia that get applied, and all of the systemic issues that add to the needle being pushed from less risky to risky, from lower cost to higher cost as a result of risk premia. And there are systemic issues there. There are things that governments can do to remove some systemic risks. And then there are funding structures that can be put in place if we're really serious about decarbonizing our energy system in order to achieve energy security and competitiveness and to drive down costs of capital. So, yeah, innovation, grid, and financing. Lots of examples we could get into if you like, but I suppose one that kind of comes up again and again in different guises. It's like an example in that risk of curtailment. As asset owners, we see it in different levels of curtailment in different systems around the world. But I suppose we need to also kind of recognize that it is a function of the energy transformation, where there has not been the requisite advance and anticipatory investment in the grid capacity. It still blows my mind how, when we have NDCs on one hand and governments, making promises and targets for decades now, that the enabling physical infrastructure isn't put in place in advance of, trying to build out the generation capacity. It's like saying you're going to, build factories for whatever food stuff you can think of, and then not building roads to transport the produce. Same thing. It should be part and parcel of the overall plan. So curtailment is one of those major challenges. It can, depending on the risk allocation, in particular power contracts and PPAs, it can sit on different sides. It can sit with the asset owner, it can sit on with the state potentially, but either way, somebody has to pay for the cost of the inefficiency. And if that sits with the asset owner, it becomes a major risk for investment. If it sits, as it does, say, in a lot of the, you know, the government contracts and in auctions more recently, and in certain markets like you see in the UK, ultimately the risk there is that it becomes a target for social resistance to, you know, the transformation of the energy supply to clean sources. Whereas at the root cause is inefficiency in not just the grid infrastructure, but also in how we use power, and how we can try with existing technologies, flexibility, to try to better balance demand and supply curves where that can be done with existing technologies like battery storage, but also with price signals, dynamic pricing, and things like thermal batteries, using heat as a storage solution, and even as the likes of, I believe, Google have done, and other industries are starting to look at how once you recognize that generation is in a renewables based system is weather based and principally somewhat intermittent, although that can be balanced a bit. There's a lot of value in shifting some processes, some load to times when there's an abundance. And there's a lot of clever work that can be done around that. So that lots of pieces of the puzzle to solve that kind of particular example, that risk of curtailment. But yeah, so barriers, if I was to sum it up, would be a mindset shift to recognizing that the energy sources of today and the future and the ones that we want, the clean ones that we want, are actually weather-based, fundamentally are distributed. They're not large centralized generation units, so they need more grid. And they are intermittent, so we need to both have large enough grids to transmit the generation to where it's needed and to be able to trade across larger areas, but also to reimagine our use of energy with available tools, so that we can better match supply with demand.
Is it fair to say that you're trying to implement some of these principles within the Irish context?
Yeah, so look, through, I suppose, taking the frustration that we spoke about earlier and trying to channel that, earlier this year, I founded a new independent nonprofit, which we call Trifecta Energy, which aims to reshape how we think about the energy transformation. It has two divisions, Trifecta Ireland, which I'll come to answer your question directly, and then Supergrid Europe, which really is about bringing that, that concept of the supergrid and helping to inform how European energy policy and grid policy, like the EU Grids package, can deliver on the backbone infrastructure that we need in the European region to enable the full penetration of renewable energy and enable the full decarbonisation of our energy system and electrify nearly everything. But back to Ireland and Trifecta Ireland. I suppose Trifecta, maybe just to explain the term, is the triple objective of clean, secure and affordable energy for all. And really there we try to take a systems thinking approach, trying to unite stakeholders, align around that vision of a clean, secure and affordable energy future, and apply kind of system change thinking as well, recognizing the triple time horizons involved in system change. At the long-term end, you call them the three Ts. The long-term end is the transformation, the transformative changes. So the things like, you know, major mega programs of mega projects like the supergrid, for example. On the other end of the spectrum, the first T then is triage. So this is, you know, what are the urgent challenges, the crisis points that we might be acutely feeling today, and what are the quicker wins in terms of solutions that can at least mitigate, if not fully alleviate, the challenges that we feel. So in Europe, there's energy security and affordability to competitiveness right across the board. And in Ireland, we feel that quite acutely. We have one of the most expensive energy prices, electricity prices in all of Europe, largely driven by our continued dependence on natural gas, despite the enormous resources, renewable energy resources and potential for, you know, leveraging the offshore wind resources that we have in the country. So then third T is that kind of what we're, you know, that transition, or the messy transition, I guess, that often is required to go from today to the transformative part. So Trifecta Ireland really is focused on trying to bridge the gap between those different time horizons, consider what the acute challenges are and look at the pain points and the barriers to deploying the right innovations, creating the enabling investment environment, what can be done with grid in the short term, identifying the pain points in the shorter term and what the available, readily, quickly deployable solutions are to try to mitigate those, while master planning for the more transformative changes and ensuring that the milestones are being put in place along the way and anything that's being done in the shorter term is aligned with that longer term vision. Yeah, so it's across, you know, not just existing electricity, but like, how do we decarbonize heat? How do we decarbonize the transport sector as well? Yeah, and taking all of those things in the round.
Leslie, you know, we've obviously spoken now about the sort of more macro perspectives of change and energy transformation. If you could actually see one change happen in the near future, what would it be?
Something that is emerging across both our divisions, Supergrid Europe and Trifecta Ireland, is this longer term idea of institutional change, and how what's actually needed is a better coordinated strategic approach, top down, maybe a separate entity that has powers to align the delivery agencies in a country. That's a longer term thing, but absent that, we've spoken a bit already about, you know, the power of digitalization to probably leapfrog things. So I would love to see a call for digital and AI solutions to our acute triage problems, and for there to be some sort of a coordinated effort around AI and digital geniuses doing a hackathon for current challenges in a particular market environment. And just bringing those kind of two areas together to try and, with this real solution orientation, and try to solve for, see what can be done to accelerate, whether it's planning and permitting has been a real challenge across all of Europe. Some countries are solving this better than others. It's a huge challenge, not just in energy, but across other sectors of infrastructure in my country. But there are definitely things, there's definitely a lot of inefficiencies in the system, in the way that planning is done. And surely there can be AI applications to at least, you know, shorten the lead time to getting permits reviewed, if nothing else, and standardized. Like there is so much inefficiency, I think, in the way we do things today that can be stripped out with the application of smarts and intelligence. Because it's not technology problems that we have right now. It is, we have most of the technologies that we need. It's about how do we unlock the blockers to deploying them faster and more efficiently and more effectively for the benefit of us all.
Leslie, before I ask my final question, if technology is not the problem, do you think people are the problem? Do you think we're hindering our own progress?
We need to get, yeah, we look, We are both the problem and the solution, of course. We just need to learn how to get out of our own way, I think is the conclusion. But we are at that stage in mature markets, like right across Europe, where things are getting challenging now because we are in that messy transition stage and we have acute problems as a result. We have things we need to triage, but we still have to have the vision and the roadmap to get us to, you know, effectively and efficiently to real transformative change. So yeah, we need to zoom out, I think, reimagine, envision, create roadmaps to that, and look about us and look at the full toolkit that we have in front of us, which is so much better than it has ever been before, and figure out smartly, intelligently, with a clear North Star of a fully decarbonized power system. And I suppose that clarity of purpose and intent and strategy, maybe that's sometimes a little lacking, but have that real clarity. The, you know, the challenge is there, the pathway has been forged, and there's huge amount of opportunity in this. So yeah, I think we can get out of our own way. and I think we will, I have no doubt.
Leslie, it has been such a pleasure. I feel like we've just scratched the surface of this topic. There's so much more I want to ask you, and I'm sure our listeners feel the same. I'm just going to mention briefly that you are going to be attending ENLIT Europe in Bilbao in November, and you are going to be speaking. So if, like me, you are listening to Leslie and thinking, I really need to speak to her, I need to get more information, or just tap into her passion and inspiration, then please do feel free to register and join us in Bilbao, because it's certainly not to be missed. And Leslie, I hope you're looking forward to sharing more about this topic with those who are attending.
I really am, Pamela. Thank you so much. Yeah, really looking forward to tapping into that positive frustration and anybody who is willing to join the coalition of the willing. So thank you so much, Pamela. It's been a huge pleasure and a privilege to speak with you today.
Leslie, the pleasure has been all mine. So thank you to you, and thank you to our listeners. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions podcast, brought to you by ENLIT and friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe.